So welcome back to our discussion. We were talking just about the newest armies that have been released for 8th edition. So let's take a look back over 2017 as the year is starting to wind down. And what are the most powerful armies here in 2017? We did have a quick posting on our Facebook page to get your thoughts, and we thought we'd discuss it here with our small panel of the three of us here. And you guys can, of course, chime in on our Facebook page if you think we got it right, if you think we're underscoring something well, or we totally missed a point. So, right off the bat, you know, we're kind of joking when before the show. Index armies, do they have a chance?
There are a couple that are still doing very, very well.
So, which ones come to mind?
Well, of course, there's always Inari, which I know that they got the Nerf Hammer, and they're still doing well. So, just to tell you how powerful they used to be, and they're still really good. Because now you've got Nerf to being just Eldar, but slightly better, with the ability to bring Dark Eldar and Harlequins and all the other fun stuff. The other one that comes to mind is Sisters of Battle. They're Acts of Faith, they're Army-wide Invul, they're super cheap units, generally speaking, and Celestine are just so good.
So one of the things that comes to mind is we talk a lot week after week in the tournaments about Chaos Soup and Imperial Soup. And one thing we've not seen yet, we've seen a Craft World Codex, we haven't seen a Harlequin Codex, we haven't seen a Drukhari Codex, we're not even sure if we'll see an Inari Codex, what that would look like. Come 2018, when you know two out of those three factions could get a Codex, will there be something as Eldari Soup, and will it be as powerful as the other two soups that we've got right now?
So I don't think it'll be in Eldari Soup, since at that point you might as well just make him Inari. The only downside with Inari is you have to make one of the Inari characters your warlord. Aside from that, it's just, if you're going to lose all your benefits anyways, you might as well get the benefit of Inari.
Fair enough. So there you go, pointy-eared friends. So those are your you mentioned Sisters of Battle being on very strong codex. I mean, one of that we tend to see. That's probably the only player I see regularly with Sisters Battles is Frankie from Frontline Gaming. Of course, he's a very skilled player, so he's good with any army, but one of the things that really stood out with that army was the gob tons of Melta that can move very quickly.
Yeah, it's a whole lot of high-powered shots that are in fairly cheap units that hit really... they're all, you know, BS3, they all have power armor, they all have an invul save, and you have the ability to do things like move again at the start of your turn, shoot again at the start of your turn, fighting at the start of your turn, heal a dude at the start of your turn. There's so many tools in the Sister Battle armory that it's very, very powerful.
So let's move into some of the other armies that we did feel were in the top 10 here. So, Don, who's your number 10?
My number 10 was Dark Angels, and that was factoring in their new codex. That's getting rid of the Azrael parking lot, which I don't think you're going to see as much anymore. He's really expensive, and he kind of overlaps their chapter tactic. He's not bad, but I don't think you're going to see him just for his warlord traits that he automatically comes with. He can give to someone else. He has that aura of 4 of Invul to infantry and bikes. It's nice, but like I said earlier, I think that you're going to see little squads out on the fringe with Hellblasters, Plasma Devastators, and Lieutenants hugging those guys. So I don't think you're going to see the parking lot in the middle of the board anymore.
All right, so we talked about Dark Angels and Great Death earlier. Moving up to number 9.
Number 9 is Sisters of Battle. And the biggest reason why I put them at number 9 is because I'm treating them as their own army. They have a whole lot of really great tools, but there are definitely armies that either ignore those tools or can just pick that army up. Whether it's a whole lot of, you know, shots. Because, like, for example, Frankie's army, I think, would have a hard time with Guard, with the blobs of conscripts. Because he does have a couple flamers in there, but his army is geared around Melta guns. So your Melta gun becomes a lot less effective when it kills a conscript.
Yeah, that's a lot of shots, you know, a lot of points invested into a Melta gun to kill a conscript. It's like, oh, gee, thanks. And sometimes you need that volume of fire to take down the screens. But I don't think. Let's put it this way: Frankie knows what he's doing, so sooner or later he'll make the appropriate adjustments to get around that. But as an army as a whole, it's an interesting army. I'm curious to see if we actually see a full-fledged codex from them in 2018. Because in the past they kind of got the short shrift where they kind of got lumped in with Agents of the Imperium, and then before that their codex was kind of ramrodded into the end of an edition, and then before that it was kind of the back pages of a chapter approved back then. I just can't imagine what a full-fledged Sisters of Battle codex will. I don't think I've seen one since 4th edition.
I think the last one I saw was the E-Codex, which was in 6th.
Yeah, I don't even care. That one doesn't... We don't speak of that one. That was just a disaster. I'm thinking back that the 4th edition one, when they first came out with Acts of Faith, and I'm just like, oh, you can change your army to whatever you want by a dice roll. That's pretty disgusting. So I'd be curious to see what they look like in 2018. All right, what do we have at number 8 on the list?
So number 8, I would say, is probably going to be Space Marines on their own. They do have a whole lot of tricks. I haven't seen a whole lot of stuff after Chapter Approved as far as how they handle the points changes, since now it became more of a Primaris-friendly army. And, you know, it's still good with all the other parts of it, but the Primaris stuff just dropped like a rock in points. So you're going to see a lot more of those tougher Marines that have better weapons, generally speaking, that throw out more attacks with less dudes on the table. And then you also see the Primaris vehicles that go along with them if they need to have transports or whatnot. So that one will be interesting to look at. But it's really hard to go wrong with Gilliman, especially, just giving everyone reroll failed everything.
Is there one particular chapter that stands out other than Ultramarines?
So the only other chapter that stands out is probably Raven Guard. And that one normally has people playing around with Lias Isidon, a Forge World chapter master that allows more deployment shenanigans, which helps out a lot because Space Marines, Chaos Space Marines, and pretty much just that kind of subgroup, they give their benefits to dreadnoughts, infantry, and bikes, and nothing else. Whereas, you know, Igard, Eldar, and the like give it out to everything. So Space Marines are kind of... If you look at a Space Marines army, very rarely will you see a whole lot of tanks. You might see the Predators for the kill shot stratagem, but most of the time it revolves around the dudes because they have the chatter tactics to go along with them. And then there are also, you know, there's more of them. Most Space Marine vehicles are not geared effectively to handle assaults. And what the Raven Guard do is they allow you to deploy in such a way that you are where you need to be from the start of the game. Especially with Lias Isidon, allowing for things to deep strike in on top of that, even if they don't normally deep strike. So he does really well with that setup.
What do you think the other ones are lacking? Because it was just, you know, not that long ago, it was white scars, blue scars, and now it's known. Sounds like the scars are put to pasture at this point.
So it's not that the other ones are bad necessarily. It's just that those two are really big standouts. White scars have the ability to fall back and charge, which, as funny as it sounds, the all-bike army of white scars does a hell of a lot better with all jump packs now. Because now you can fall back over people, charge into their squishy stuff, their big guns, their characters, and kill those off without really caring. And also, if you have jump packs, when you fall back, you can shoot, and then you can charge. So Codex White Scars became Codex Jump Pack, as funny as that sounds. The Imperial Fists, they're not bad. They do a whole lot better if fortifications were actually brought, because they have a very awesome benefit against fortifications, which is reroll failed wounds against them. You just don't see them, and most ITC missions kind of don't allow them because of how weird that their rules are. But the other big part is that they have ignores cover, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, but it actually is a whole lot when you get to things like hell blasters that just pick up Marines out of cover. You get other parts too where those 2-up saves become 3-up saves, or those 5-up saves become 6-up saves. It makes cover the way that people are used to playing, where they hide and cover, not a benefit to them. It only helps the Imperial Fist player. Salamanders, the rough thing with Salamanders is they do really well as MSU, which I shouldn't say not really well, they do amazingly well as MSU. But at the same point, when they're building an MSU army, they have so many drops that they tend to go second, and with 8th edition being such an alpha strikey army, or edition, it really, really hurts when you make your opponent go first. Salamanders have the ability to reroll one failed hit and one failed wound for each squad, each phase. Or no, each time they fire or fight. So shooting, fighting, whenever they do that, they can reroll one. Let's see, who else is in there? We have Black Templars. And the unfortunate thing is, Space Marines are so much better at shooting than they are at melee, that the Black Templars' ability to reroll field charges is just kind of laughable. Because most of the time you're going to be shooting, and you're going to be like, well, I have this reroll charges, that's neat. And then there's Iron Hands, which have a 6-up final pain on their arm. Infantry, Dreadnoughts, and Bikes, which is, I think that's a sore spot for Iron Hands players, because in the last edition, and the edition before that, Iron Hands had this wonderful ability where their Field of Pain actually extended to all their vehicles. And with the Index coming out, and now the... Well, that wasn't even the Index. That was with the Codex coming out, they just completely ripped it off all their tanks, because otherwise that was the vehicle-heavy army. So then you get all those guys, and I don't think I'm missing any. No, because we talked about Ultramarines, we talked about Wraith Guard. So yeah, I think that's all of them.
Yeah, I think it's Crimson Fists, but...
Crimson Fists, they're... If you're going to play Crimson Fists, just run Imperial Fists. Yep, so then we have Adeptus Mechanicus with Soup Elements. And by Soup Elements, I mean something to screen off your very, very large amounts of fire that come from your Castellan Robots, your Dune Crawlers, Call, all that stuff. So normally that's conscripts, infantry squads, and or Bulgren. And then also every Adeptus Mechanicus army has to have that one little winged angel from the Sisters of Battle, Celestine. She is too good not to bring. Even with her points increase up to 200 points, just bring her. She will distract your enemy from shooting at your big stuff long enough that your big stuff will destroy what actually can harm it. And they hit so hard.
So curious that they have to rely on Imperial units as screens. What's wrong with Stalkers and their other Skitarii infantry that's out there?
So their Skitarii infantry, none of it's durable enough to handle, or none of it's durable and or cheap enough in any combination to handle being a screen. You can do things like Rangers, which are not terrible as far as shooting units go, Vanguard, but they just evaporate as soon as they get touched. Some screens are built to be evaporate before they get touched, but you can't do anything like pushing them out further or giving them an order to fall back and not care, or you know, anything like that. And like I said, they're not cheap enough to absorb things like infantry squads or conscripts are. And they're not durable enough like Bulgren are to just push things away.
Fair enough. What's next on our list?
So next up we have Tyranids, and that was something I got to have fun with this weekend playing against. So Tyranids have a whole lot of tools that are available to them. The most amazing thing about Tyranids is that all their special characters, as opposed to every other codex, do not have to be a specific high fleet. Whereas, you know, Gilman has to be an Ultramarine, Pask has to be a Cadian, Abaddon has to be a Black Legion. The Swarmlord can be whichever high fleet he wants to be. And he is one of the things that makes that codex fairly good, especially with Kraken. You get the Kraken Gene Stealers that advance, then he tells them to advance again, then they charge because they have the ability to advance and charge. The reason why I say Kraken is because Kraken gets to roll 3 dice every time it advances and take the highest. And they also have the ability to use a stratagem that whenever they advance, they take the high or the advance roll that they got and double it. so they can fly across the table at you. And Gene Stealers hit like a truck, die in droves, but when they're charging, they normally tend to hit first, and they pick up everything before it gets a chance to swing back. So they're really good. You got other things like Biovores that throw out mortal wounds. They interrupt movement paths because if they miss, they throw out spore mines. Yeah, they have so many tools, it's ridiculous. And that's just like one part of the many things that Tyranids can do. They can hit really hard with their shooting. They can have really durable units that just hog up the middle of the field. So if you haven't played against Tyranids yet, I would definitely say that you look at what they can do, because otherwise they will catch you off guard and they will hurt you really bad.
And we talked about Tyranids in quite length when the Codex came out, and I think they're still my odds-on favorite to win LVO. I think they have the one army that has said it has all the tools, like you said, but has enough time to a strong player to master them. But I think just enough time where I wouldn't say the casual player, but let's say not the player who is as committed, will have enough time to practice against them. And then I think come end of January, they're going to be in for a surprise.
I can definitely see at least one of them making it in top 8.
Yeah, I definitely see that. All right, what do we have next on your top 10 list? I think we're up to number 4?
5. So number 5 is my personal favorite, but that's just because I plan on using them at LVO, is the Death Guard.
Boo.
The Death Guard, unfortunately, hey, you know full well what they're capable of.
Boo.
So the downside to Death Guard is that it has a whole lot of traps that will make you lose if you take the things that look amazing. If you bring Mortarion, he will never make his points back unless your opponent plays wrong. And he's too easy to kill. He gives up a lot of points. He's not terribly good. He's an awesome looking model. He will kill whatever he touches, but most of the time it's going to be little screens that cost nothing. Aside from that, there's also things like the Death Shrouds. The Death Shroud Terminators, my favorite looking model in that entire codex. I cannot find any reason to bring them competitively because they are too slow as an all melee unit that has to be around a character other than Mortarion, because Mortarion will fly away from them. So those are the two things that people will fall into the pit trap of and will lose games because of those two. My personal favorite thing is the Plagueburst Crawler in there, which is the jack-of-all-trades tank that is so damn durable that it will outlive you by the time it kills you. And then it does really well when you add in things like Epidemus. But that's just everything that is Demon Nurgle, which works really well with the Death Guard Demon engines. The other part that's important about the Death Guard Codex is that you should not bring anything that does not have Disgustingly Resilient, unless it's maybe a Lord, because that rule is what makes that codex so good. Everything else is great, but that is the rule that brings that codex up another level. So aside from that, I think Death Guard, if for nothing else, they can outlast most other armies.
Yeah, for an addition that prides itself on picking up models quickly, this army has incredible resiliency and durability. And I think that's the biggest thing is you got to get some practice against this army, because you think you've got a plan and you shoot and there's nothing more frustrating than I shot everything and I inflicted a wound. Oh my, what do I do now? So, and it does hit back. Almost as, hits like a train. I think that's what gets me, most of my frustration with playing against Death Guard is I can deal with the resiliency. It's when you get hit with these models that are like damage 2, damage 3, and just rip right through your army with, you only failed one save, but boy, you're just eliminating wounds left and right. So,
yeah.
All right, number 4.
Number 4, I'd have to give it to the Blood Angels. I think I know this a little bit, which is they are a great army as far as they're extremely mobile. They have really good options for covering the board. That's basically what I just said, but they have the ability to shoot well. They have the ability to do close combat well. They cannot take getting punched in the face well. If they go second, they are more likely to lose by a massive degree than if they go first. And that's the thing that makes it not in the top three for me, is that they are very much so the who goes first role. So there are, yeah.
I'm trying to think, do they have anything like character-wise or stratagem-wise to maximize going first, or is that they're still stuck on that die roll?
They're still stuck on that die roll.
And on average, how many drops do you think they'll have?
The list I brought had 12. I'm actually fairly certain you're going to see much larger ones than that, because people want to have those command points. Which, the Animus Vitae, that relic, if you don't bring it, you're wrong. It's the same thing as Kuraz Aquila for the Eye Guard. Well, it's the flip-flop version of that, but it's like having the Eye Guard Warlord trait or Gillen's Warlord trait, where you use a stratagem, see if you get a command point back. So it's very, very useful, because you figure 1 in 3, because it's a 5-up every time you use a stratagem. Now, unfortunately, it's only 1 command point you get back with that relic, but it's 1 in 3 times you use a stratagem, you should be getting a command point back. And they do like to use their stratagems.
So we're getting to your top 3. What do we have here?
Alright, so number 3 is Chaos Space Marines with Demon Screens. Reason why I say Demon Screens is because the only part that is worth it in the Demon's Codex right now for Chaos Space Marines is the Changeling, a Herald of Tzeentch, and a bunch of Brimstones. That is the only thing that helps out Chaos Space Marines more than anything else. Because you figure, for lack of a better term, a 10-man unit of Brimstones is a toughness 3, 20 wound, 4 bimble save, minus 1 to hit most of the time because it's around the Changeling, monstrous creature that you have to deal with. That is super frustrating. And then on top of that, they can smite you. It's a hard thing for them to do, and it only does 1 mortal wound, but they can still smite, and they can still absorb a lot of damage because they're 2 wounds apiece, so they're not really feeling a whole lot of leadership unless you really, really hit the unit. And then if they're around the Changeling, it's really hard to hit them in the first place because they have a minus 1 to hit on them. So that's that part of it. Chaos Space Marines, Obliterators are an amazing choice. They hit ridiculously hard. If they're Slaanesh, you can make them fire twice a turn. So that helps out. And that is the one thing that my Death Guard army has actually found that it doesn't like at all, is when Obliterators come down, use their Endless Cacophony, which is the second firing thing, and they just tear apart my Plagueburst Crawlers with that. They just hit so hard, especially when they get the 3 damage on their random damage output. So like it always happens. On top of that, you have the cultist bombs that you can do, which is just 40 dudes with auto guns that shoot after teleporting across the table, and they can refill whatever they lost. They teleport across the table, they get in rapid fire range, they unload on you, and you can even give them the stratagem of plus 1 to wound. So they're wounding marines all the way up to bikers, I guess, because they're strength 3, on 4s with that stratagem. Or anything above that, which includes toughness 10 on 5s. And it's just so many shots they throw out. So they can do a very large amount of damage in that very short amount of time. And the most common version that you'll see right now is the Alpha Legion. So you see the 40 Alpha Legion conscripts. You'll see a couple squads of Corn Berserkers probably that are going to appear in front of you after the Seize initiative roll. That's the other important thing, after the Seize. So they know whether they're going first or not. And then the turn starts, they move forward, they charge you, or they shoot you, or they're going to do both. So it just has a whole lot of tools, a whole lot of power. It will punch you in the face very hard.
Very cool. So number 2.
Number 2 is Imperial Guard with Soup Elements again. I don't think Imperial Guard by itself is amazing, but the Soup Elements come back with, you have Gilman, if you want to have the extra command points and the regaining command points. Granted, you can have regaining command points from Eye Guard, but you have his, and he gives an aura of real ones to hit for Imperium. And then you're also going to want to have Celestine in there, because Celestine is just amazing. Imperial Guard has a whole lot of shooting, a whole lot of screens, a whole lot of obstacles that's going to be on the table. So you have to be able to pick up hordes of things while they're also beating the tar out of you. So that's one of the reasons why I put it in number two. It's because it has so many options available to it.
So number one on the list, who is what everyone has to be worried about?
So in my opinion, it's hands down Yanari with Eldar buddies. Yeah, Yanari got nerfed. Yes, they needed to get nerfed. No, they're not unplayable. Yanari, they're always going to bring that one unit of Dark Reapers that's going to pick up a squad or two a turn, or more if they want to, or they're going to pick up Magnus a turn. They're going to pick up a big old tank a turn. They're going to do whatever they want, because they have the ability to do so much shenanigans with even just redeploying entire portions of their army before the game starts. They have Rangers that can push out Alpha Legion. They have high-powered shooting. They have an army-wide... the Yanari part too. They have an army-wide minus one to hit, because you can put your Yanari Dark Reapers that are Aloytok inside the Aloytok Craft World Wave Serpent. So you can do a whole lot of stuff that just makes it so it's super hard to kill. Meanwhile, they are beating the tar out of you. So
I didn't think they could combine Craft World with Yanari. Okay, I didn't. So those are separate detachments, right?
Correct. They had to be separate detachments. So you have a Yanari detachment, which is your Warlord of most likely Yavrain. That's probably going to be a heavy support detachment with a big blob of Dark Reapers and two smaller blobs of Dark Reapers. And there's your Yanari part, because that's all you care about as far as Yanari. You can bring a couple extra things if you really want to have Soul Bursting closer, but most of the time everything else is whatever craft world that you are. Or you find some way to make it so that just you have enough points to fill out the Yanari part to make it Yanari primary if you're going for that. But yeah, then you get the Eldar part of it. Eldar is a good codex. Eldar is a great codex. If you haven't played the new Eldar yet, I would definitely suggest that you pick it up, take a look at the book, if that's one of your armies. Look at it. Rangers are amazing. They cost nothing. Shuriken weapons are amazing. They cost... What shoots them costs nothing. If you want to go Yandan Guardians cost nothing, and they don't go away. They have the old Commissar where no matter how many dudes you lose, you can only ever lose one dude for leadership. So you can run big old hordes of Guardians that hit really, really hard in shooting. It's just they have all these tools that are amazing. And then, of course, you get to the Forge World part of it where you bring like something like a Scorpion. The Scorpion, it costs 700 some odd points, but whatever it looks at will go away every single turn. It shoots 4d6 shots of strength 12 or 14. I want to say it's 14. Minus 4, minus 5. 3 damage shots that if you roll 6 to wound, do 6 damage instead. And it hits on 2s. So that just tells you how much damage that thing can shove out. And it will kill whatever it looks at.
So there you have it, folks. Our top 10 for this year. Agree with us? Disagree with us? Hit us up on Facebook. Let me know what your comments are at this particular point. Interesting thoughts, and also, you know, while we're at it here, bold prediction for 2018. Who do you think will crack into the top 10 that has not gotten a codex so far?
I want to say Necrons. I'm thinking Necrons are going to find some way to be the Curian again, where they have something that is just outright crazy. They become super durable again. They just don't go away.
That would be nice to see.
I'd like to see just the return of their offensive output coming back again. They used to be the anti-tank army, and yeah, it's not quite there yet. I don't have to say that chapter approved stratagems they got were pretty close then. They basically brought back Kineptic Harvest, and I can't remember the other formation, but they already, like you said, brought back some formation shenanigans in the forms of stratagem. So, yeah, we really need to see the Necrons back on the top levels again.
Yeah, so. I actually like the... So I think it's a Warlord trait that the Necron Warlord gets, of course, where he gets -1 to the damage he takes, which I thought that was awesome. It's also very fluffy, and if you don't know about the Necrons, they regenerate wounds every turn. Then, on top of that, you have the other ability that I think is once per game. It's a relic that you can get. You can have your Warlord plus an entire unit of whatever you want, basically. You yank it up with you and just appear at 9 inches or more from an enemy, you know, beyond 9 inches, so 9.01. And I thought that that was a tremendous ability for them to just fly across the table and hit things really hard with rapid firing, hit on twos, warriors, hit like a truck. The only downside is if you get in a combat with them, they don't like it there.
No, they don't.
Now it's really nice to see Veil of Darkness come back, so that was really cool. And, alright, so those are our predictions. We'll see. Love to see your comments on Facebook and see what your thoughts are versus our top 10.